Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hello.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out the episode in the series. Please hit the subscribe button. We put out 3 new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me, I'm Kyle Meredith, and today talking with Frank Turner about his new album, FTHC. It's his 9th record, actually, and one that just recently landed at number 1 in the UK album chart, marking the first time that he's done so. So the English singer-songwriter, we're going to talk about his 50 States in 50 Days tour that he's currently on, writing about addiction, acceptance, and mortality, and about his friend Scott Hutchinson of Frightened Rabbit's suicide. Now, Frank's also going to go on to talk about wanting to eventually make a classic country record, as well as his appreciation for the genre's craft. So let's do it. Talking FTHC, it's Kyle Meredith with Frank Turner.
Hello, how you doing?
First off, congratulations on this album. It knocked me out. It sucker punches me in the good ways and in the beautiful, hurtful ways, if that makes sense. I mean, this is everything I want out of an album.
Well, thank you very much. That's kind of you to say.
I know beyond that, and we're going to jump into the deep end of this record here in a minute, but the tour, as you told me off camera a minute ago, you're on an off day right now. I don't know how you have off days, because I saw the schedule for this year. 50 states in 50 dates.
Yeah.
Are you mad?
Yeah, probably. Like, the idea to do 50 states in 50 days has been around for a little while, and obviously it's been on the back burner because of pandemic and everything, and I wanted to hit the ground running when we finally got a chance to tour properly, and so this idea has been dusted off and come out of the cupboard. It is insane, and it's my fault. It's my idea. But, you know, I like a challenge. And plus, at the moment, I've got 3 states I've never played, which are Wyoming, South Dakota, and Hawaii. So if nothing else, I will complete my sheet. I'll get a clean record on that one, which will be nice. But yeah, it's going to be tough, but I'm looking forward to it.
Like, how are you taking care of yourself? Not just exhaustion, but, you know, as a vocalist and all that stuff, like,
sure.
Are these factors added into it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, like, one of the main things is I'm probably not going to drink for the whole tour. I don't really drink to excess generally anyway, but these days, I should say. You know, it does affect your voice, so it's going to be probably a more sober tour. I mean, it's also worth noting that I'm not playing every single day for 50 days. We're doing kind of like a matinee show and an evening show a few times, which buys us a day off every time we do that. Some of which we need for travel reasons. Hawaii is quite far away. So, you know, we'll get through it. I'm in the middle of trying to get in touch with, do you know George Thorogood?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he's the only person who's ever done it before. In 1981, before I was born, he played 50 states in 50 days. And he actually did a show every day for 50 days, which is crazy.
Which is what makes him bad to the bone.
Yeah, well, he's also, I might add, still touring like a total maniac. So getting hold of him is proving easier said than done. But I figured that it would be cool to like sit down with a veteran before the tour and maybe afterwards as well and discuss what I'm in for.
It also takes care of that whole thing. Like once you announce the tour, inevitably you'll have all those fans like, oh, you didn't come here.
Like, yeah, you know, that was part of the motivation. It was like trying to finally do a tour announcement that didn't have complaints about where we weren't going. Unfortunately, it didn't work this time either because of Houston, San Francisco, and Pittsburgh are the three that have been roused in their ire, should we say. But I mean, you know, I think it's as close to that as I'm ever gonna get.
Yeah, no, if you're complaining at this point, no, nah, you don't get it.
Well, I'm traveling quite far to get to this tour, so hopefully some other people can do some traveling too.
Well, the one fun thing, you know, as we get into this record, I'm sure that's not obviously not lost on you, but it finally gives you the moment on the song The Gathering. This is a song that came out about a year ago, and about this celebratory moment, like,
sure.
Like this is finally seeing that moment, right? Because you sort of wrote this on an assumption, I guess, when you first put it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly, let's say it was a forward-looking song, you know, an aspirational song. And I think one of the things that I've learned, and I almost knew this at the time, but like a lot of people, when the pandemic sort of and the lockdown began, and we all sort of grasped that it was going to be longer than the 3 weeks that we were initially promised and all the rest. I think a lot of people for a long time, myself included, sort of thought there would be a kind of finish line, you know, when they would ring the church bells and we would run into the street and hug and open mouth kiss and do a circle pit or whatever. And and it's not as cut and dried as that. And for reasons that are now obvious, you know, and I want to be respectful of the fact that some people remain uncomfortable about going to shows, and I don't hold any that against anybody. I get it. You know, and we're trying to sort of be responsible in the way we tour and all this kind of thing. But at the same time, like, I've been fortunate to have a few moments that have sort of felt like what that song is about already. You know, and it is a pretty, it's a pretty special thing, you know, like, one can't have this discussion without quoting Joni Mitchell, which is never a bad thing to do anyway, but you don't know what you got till it's gone. You know, live music is my passion and my livelihood and my hobby and all the rest of it, but like I think even for people who are less immersed in it than I am, over the last couple of years it's become apparent how important that was to a lot of people, and it's a wonderful thing to get it back again.
Yeah, I went to a few shows in the past week and not really realizing, and two of them were stadium shows and one of them was a smaller venue, and not really realizing exactly how much I had missed it, you know, and to be so different. One of the shows was Tool and the other one's Billie Eilish. So it was really the spectrum right there.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And both of them just as celebratory. And man, I'm saying obvious things, but that feeling, like you can't put a word on that.
Right. Well, I mean, at the risk of getting highfalutin for a second, if you'll forgive my use of the word highfalutin, you know, there is definitely a collectivist kind of part of the human psyche, and this is not an original observation, incidentally, but like, you know, historically religions played a big part in that, or some people get it from sports and some people get it from yoga classes and some people get it from live music, you know, and it's an important thing. I think it's a necessary kind of soul food, you know what I mean? And like, one of the things about the last couple of years is that human beings are social animals, and whilst I'm not for a second one of these lockdown skeptic types, nevertheless, like, it's unsustainable to do that like permanently, do you know what I mean? It's like we have to commune with each other at some point in some fashion, and you know, it's quite powerful when you get the opportunity to do that again.
Well, you will be hitting Louisville. Luckily, it's not across the states when you come here to the Mercury Ballroom, so I'll be excited to see that.
Yeah, definitely, and I will be up on my pronunciation of the name of your city, which is something I've long struggled with.
I was just saying this in a different interview too. Because inevitably when I say Louisville, that will come up a lot of the time. And no matter how hard I try, it's not something you can really explain to someone how to do that. What I've gotten to is most people make the mistake ultimately, not on the slurring of the first half, the Louisville, because that's sort of easy. It's they can't get past not saying Ville.
Yeah, know? Yeah, sure. Louisville.
You're going to have to do it the same way.
Yeah, a friend of mine who's from Louisville, actually Louisville, is that right? Louisville?
Louisville.
Basically told me that you start saying the name of the town and then you give up. right? About halfway
That's a
through.
Good way to do it. That's and, like, and, cool.
Yeah, you just, it's like you were gunning for it and then you just went, ah.
That's
well,
a good way
whatever.
To do it. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They'll get it. They know what I'm talking about.
Either way about it, you are bringing this again. Great new record.
Thank
FDHC,
you.
Which you have mined your soul for and in return landed a number one record.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, it's a strange feeling. Like when I was a kid, it was a point of pride for me that I didn't like any bands who were in the charts, and I had that traditional punk rock disdain for the charts as a concept. And I would have I looked with disgust upon bands who were in the charts. I mean, of course, as my friends have pointed out, this was possibly because it wasn't remotely within the realms of possibility for me at the time, so it's easy to do. I mean, there is still a part of me that thinks the whole thing's kind of a sats and all the rest of it, but it. Nevertheless, it's an achievement. It took a lot of work. And I feel quite proud to have done it on album 9, you know. But my reaction to getting the number one, and I have a very dear and old friend of mine, Dan from the band Bastille, got the number one the week before. And we were both chatting about it and talking about how the feeling isn't, it's not quite hooray. The feeling's more like, yeah, like mic drop. And sort of like and kind of like, yes, I can actually if I want to. And then also in brackets, and I'm never going to try and do this again because it's a nightmare. But no, I'm very proud of it. It's a cool thing. And I get a little statuette, which is nice.
You know, reaching that, I get what you're saying, because I call it my Adbusters days. You know, I had my Adbusters days through my teens and 20s, too. And to me, the realization is not like here you are, you know, hanging around in the top of the charts. It's you've produced something that so many people connected with. And the fact that what you've produced is not generic broad topics as a lot of the pop charts, you know, have. I mean, this is real shit.
Well, I mean, it's there's a sense of satisfaction as well. I will never talk down any of my previous records. I'm fiercely proud of all of them. But like this one was definitely a case of like, fuck everybody else, I'm going to make the record I want to make. And like, not that I've ever really been otherwise inclined, but there was something very, I think the lockdown sort of helped with that, because I just wasn't seeing anybody and you're just sort of so kind of isolated almost. It was just very kind of like tunnel vision for what the record was going to be. And I guess the way I would describe it is that it's a record that follows my first musical instincts. I was trying really hard not to second guess myself and to just allow my influences free rein, you know, in a way. Some of which, incidentally, are very much Louisville based. Crank
That was good. That was really good.
Crank Records from Louisville in the 90s was a huge deal for me, and all those kind of bands was a big part of my musical upbringing. I used to write off and get the Crank Records catalog, in fact, and mail order from it.
That's awesome.
At the time, I believe that Louisville, which I pronounced wrong at the time as well, was a sort of mystic foreign land full of incredible bands. And it is. I mean, but my point with the record, so it was unforced. It was unadorned. It was just me kind of like plowing my own furrow. And of all of the records I made, for this to be the one that gets to that top slot is quite satisfying. It's quite surprising in its way as well, in the sense that, you know, it was like, I'm not trying to please anybody else. And then suddenly I did. Who knew?
Well, like I said, especially when you get into the subjects that we're talking about, I'll point out like the opening line of Untainted Love, which first hear that. I mean, this is the part that we don't hear about very often. You know, when it comes to addiction, it's that constant want afterward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, incidentally, the first line of that song is a Johnny Cash quote. That is apparently what he used to say after Grace. He'd say, I sure do miss them drugs, and then eat his food, which is insane, but beautiful. But yeah, I mean, you know, addiction's been a part of my life and always will be. And like one of the jumping off points for the writing of that song was that I was trying to explain it to my wife. You know, a big part of me cleaning up that side of my act was meeting my wife and her kind of going, Jesus Christ. And, you know, and for her encountering drug use in a way that was not recreational was a new thing for her. And, you know, it is in my past now. It's in my rearview mirror. For the time being, constant fight. And this is kind of what I was trying to explain to her, is it was like, I think about drugs 3 times an hour, let's say. You know, if I hold any hotel room key or credit card, I'm thinking about drugs. Every single time I walk into a bathroom stall in a bar or anything like that, there's a part of you that's checks out your landscape, you know, and it's just there and it will always be there. And it was, I was trying to explain this to her about how sort of constant that is. And I suspect always will be, you know, I'm comfortable with it now. It's not a thing, it's not an impulse that I'm giving into, but it's an ongoing thing. And trying to explain that to her, and it's with so many of the songs on the record, it's not a very metaphorical or like particularly like flowery lyrics kind of record. It's pretty just telling it how it is. And it's like, you know, I sure do miss them drugs and not giving the slightest fuck. And yeah, I mean, that's it right there.
Yeah, but even direct lyrics, and you've always been known, you know, to be a lyrical person, which, you know, the trick that you pull off, though, because to be direct and to be poetic at the same time, I don't know if you can pinpoint it, but where does that come from? Because that's the something that we've always kind of leaned into on your music is the stories that you tell. Sure. Did this come naturally for you just to be lyrical in this way?
I mean, I've been trying to write lyrics for a long time, let's say that, you know, so and with varying degrees of success. And like, good Lord, no, you may not listen to my band when I was 15 or whatever. But like, I think that there's been an interesting kind of confluence of influences for me. That was a bad sentence. There's an interesting confluence of ideas for me. Just like, I'm a huge fan of Adam Duritz and John K. Sampson and
Duritz right here.
There we go.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's been a confluence of those kind of things, but also with a hefty dash of Black Flag, you know, and like, I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. My head really hurts. If I don't find a way out of here, I'm going to go berserk because I'm crazy and I'm hurt. And it's like, it's not fucking around. It's just telling it how it is. And I like to think that somewhere in that kind of melange is something that I do that's got its own place. You know what I mean? Right. It's for other people to judge ultimately. But yeah, there is a kind of directness that comes from my love of punk rock records that is then mixed in with something more traditionally folky or lyrical, or however you want to describe it.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Well, the other side of that, and playing into those words, you know, if we're looking for themes here, the thing that kept arriving to me on these songs, whether it was an Untainted Love, whether it's Miranda, A Wave Across the Bay, which we're going to get to, anger and acceptance. Things sort of start with the anger, maybe, but you make it to the acceptance, it seems like, in every single one of these songs. Did you notice that as you were going through it?
Not so much when I was writing it, but when I've been doing interviews about it, it's become very apparent to me that you're correct. I think, you know, acceptance, and also I would throw in kind of like, in parallel, wrapped up in that is a sense of kind of getting older. I turned 40 in December, and you know, there is one of the major things for me about getting older is trying to find a way of accepting it, because there are certain people who kind of leave their flush of youth behind and take it badly. Do you know what I mean? They take it like somebody who got dumped and is still standing outside their ex's window crying and screaming and trying to kick the door in. And it's like, you're never going to be 26 again. Sorry, it's just never, it's done, it's over. And the best thing you can do is look back and kind of go, well, I did that well, I had a good time. Let's wave that off with grace. You know what I mean? And acceptance, yeah, sure. And so moving out of London, or finding acceptance of my relationship with my father, or even the most kind of like, the most challenging version of it, you alluded to this, Wave Across the Bay is about many things, and suicide is a complicated topic, but you know, the song is about Scott Hutchison from White Rabbit, a dear friend of mine who took his own life. And one of the most difficult thoughts I have about all of that, obviously sadness is the overriding emotion, but like, there's a sense that Scott didn't screw up. Do you know what I mean? He didn't make a mistake. He took a choice. It's not a choice that I wished he'd made. But he took a choice and he followed through with it. And there is a part of me that wants to kind of respect his autonomy. Do you know what I mean? And to find a way of saying, okay, man, that was you. That was your right to make that choice. And I want to believe that he found the piece that he was looking for on some level, you know. And that's a hard thing to think and to talk about. But that's kind of partly what that song is about.
I was I didn't know that song was on here. I hadn't done any reading before I played the album. I had it in my earbuds. I knew Scott through some of my all-time favorite interviews that we've ever done. I had an invitation to come over, you know, and do the hangout and all that stuff.
Of course, I mean,
you could not know this guy without loving him.
Yeah,
just absolutely. I didn't know that song was there, and talk about a fucking sucker punch. That as soon as you said his name at the beginning, I went, no. And not knowing where I was going to go, Frank, I was complete tears by the end of that. But in the way that you're sad and celebrating someone at the same time, and it's been years now, you know.
Yeah.
First, I just want to say, that's one of the greatest tributes I have ever heard in song form in my life.
Thank you. That's very kind.
And that's, but it's true. It's, you know, the way that you're talking about him and the way that, you know, he did make a choice. I mean, we're talking about you as a great lyricist, and Scott is one of the greatest lyricists. The fact that he told us where he was going to do it, you know, 10 years prior in a different song, you know, we were talking about that, the weird complications you have with a person, because when he died, I was angry. But at the same time, I was like, you son of a bitch, you're such an artist.
Oh. You know what? I know what you mean. And like, it was such a hard time, you know, that because there was the period of time when he went missing for a while, and the family were trying to organize this kind of outreach. But he went missing by the bridge, you know, and it was like, I'm going to do what I can, but I have a feeling I know what's happened here. And it was so shit because I spoke to him shortly beforehand, like as in a week or two beforehand, and he was in a really great place. And he did that Master System record incidentally, which is one of my favorite things he ever did. That record's fucking phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And we had a conversation because we were both on tour, and I was trying to see if I could coordinate one of my days off to come see them or one of his days off to come see me or whatever. And it wasn't going to work. We were, you know, in other ends of the country or whatever, but we had a lovely chat and you know, so it was a surprise in the short term. Whether it was a surprise in the long term, I don't know. That's a more difficult question, but you know, he was a shining beacon. The man gave brilliant hugs. He had a smile to light up a room. He was funny. And also it's important to say, I was a fan first. Actually, I came across that music. I fell in love with it in summer of 2010. We were on the same radio festival circuit in the States together, and so we'd be on the same kind of backstage compound every day for like a month, and we were in a bus and they were in a van, which meant that we got there before them every day. So every day I would go and find their dressing room and sit in it until they arrived, because I was desperate. I was like, I love this band so much, I'm gonna make them my friends. And and every day they'd arrive and their band and crew would be like, Jesus Christ, like the fucking English guy is here again. And because Scott is such a diamond, his response was to go, hey man, nice to see you. I don't think he had any fucking idea who I was. But we became friends over that summer. So yeah. Beautiful guy.
Did you know that you were going to write this song? I mean, because sometimes you set about something intentionally, but a lot of times, you know, words on a page ended up becoming something else.
Yeah, well, the thing about this song and like the song that it is contained within the lyrics, basically, I had a lucid dream that featured Scott coming into my bedroom with a guitar and playing me a song. And I woke up and I wrote it down. And the only thing I added to it was an introduction pointing out that I recognize that that's an insane thing to say. And indeed, that Scott would probably be pissed off with me saying that, because we were both of us quite atheist, rationalist, skeptical types and all the rest of it. And it's a true story. And ultimately, obviously, what we're talking about is an extreme form of grieving, I suppose. But my wife will attest to it. I got up at like 4 a.m. having had this really lucid dream. And I went into the spare room at our house and I picked up a guitar and I made a voice note, which I still have on my phone, that has, and I scribbled down, you know, 16 lines of lyrics or whatever. And then I went back to sleep and I woke up in the morning and went, holy shit, that's a song. And that's fucking weird, you know, and I recognize that's weird. And it's funny, a lot of people are like, oh, that song must have been hard to write. And it's like, not really. It just kind of showed up, you know. It was hard then to deliver. And it was hard. I consulted with Grant, Scott's brother, who was also in the band, about the song. I did a demo of it and sent it to him and said, you know, I'm not going to put this into the world without your approval, because that would be crazy. And Grant was such a diamond about it. He wrote back to me a couple of days later and he said, well, I can't listen to it. But he said, but I think my brother would want you to put this out. And I think that we were a band who dealt in emotionally intense material. And, you know, and we've done a benefit 7-inch for the charity and all this kind of thing as well. It came together in a spooky way, shall we say.
Yeah, I don't know how you've been doing the set list and live, but I'd wondered, like, when you have a song like this, do you use the opportunity to also, you know, throw in a Frightened Rabbit cover along with it? I mean, is that type of thing happen?
I haven't as yet. I mean, but this is a thing I've been toying with. I mean, I have regularly played Modern Leper, and Scott and I used to play for Modern Leper as a duet together. In fact, I have it tattooed on my wrist as well. So, quite possibly. I mean, it's a funny thing, like, because I am playing that song live. It's, some people are like, will you ever play it live? And I'm like, fuck yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah, right. You know, but like, it's funny, like, it's totally fine to introduce a song and to play the song. What I'm slightly struggling with at the moment is, like, coming out of the song. Like, you finish, and then it's like, so anyway, everyone having a good time? Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, and then people are like, not really, not anymore. So maybe it has to go at the end of a set or something going forward.
In my head, and this a total fan moment here, in my head, and because it's also one of my favorite songs he did, as soon as it ended after, like, the fourth or fifth time that I heard it, my brain immediately went to The Loneliness and the Scream. It's like, oh, what a great moment for that song right there. You know, that's
yeah.
It's passing some notes over to you. You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Duly noted. Yes, good.
and I'll quickly point out, by the way that you've laid out this album, grouping certain songs together, you do have what you called your parent trilogy. We get that with Fatherless. It ends up with Miranda. I noticed after, I don't know if this is meant to be like this, but even after A Wave Across the Bay, you go with The Resurrectionist, which is not thematically about the same thing, but to this whole idea of bringing something back to life after we've just talked about someone dying, you know, is that part of it?
Thank you for noticing. That's all I'll say. Like, not everybody does, but like, I mean, it is like the amount of work that goes into things like sequencing a record is considerable, you know, and there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and song list choice and all these things. And, you know, minor gripe, we live in the world of the instant expert on social media and all the rest of it. And it's like, have you thought about this? And it's like, yes, I have, actually. Like, more than you, funnily enough. But yes, there is definite kind of theming to the record, for sure.
That makes it even extra fun, especially as I'm listening to it. Total shot in the dark here. I don't even think I'm right, by the way, but I was listening to the Perfect Score, song Perfect Score. That riff, it just kept reminding me of something. And I think I eventually landed on maybe Dinosaur Jr. It's got a very Dinosaur Jr. riff to it.
Well, it's definitely of a kind of like, I mean, do you know the book Our Band Could Be Your Life by Michael Azarad?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's a pretty decent summation of quite a large chunk of my taste in music, so you know there's definitely that in there. But there's also the start of that riff is a little bit of a Black Flag quote, that ba-da-ba-bum-bum is almost a Nervous Breakdown, you know. So there's a lot of nods going on with the music of that tune. I mean, actually, it was really fun to come at that song and be like, there was a moment when we were recording it where it was like, oh, it sounds a little bit like kind of Dookie era Green Day. Which is not really a thing that I was expecting to come out. And then it has lots to do with the bass tone on the record and Tarrant's incredible bass playing. But it was a pleasant surprise moment as well. It was like, oh yeah, it kind of does. Like, fuck, yeah, nice.
It's a fun one. It really is.
Yeah.
There are lots of great riffs on here. I'll end with, you know, so the record originally ends with Farewell to My City. And
so,
then we get the deluxe edition, which has become almost like the encore of a concert anymore. You know, I've been talking a lot with a lot of artists about how much I miss B-sides, and I do understand that this has sort of taken the spot for B-sides a lot of times these days. Yeah. But after the Zeitbeast, you get this song, House Where I Was Raised. And, you know, I don't know if you mean it this way as we talk about sequencing and thematics of a record, because after going through Fatherless and everything there and coming up to it, to Farewell to My City, and now we have House Where I Was Raised in this almost, you know, just you and a guitar moments.
Sure.
Where are we left at that point? And did you consider that song as part of the idea that we're talking about?
That song, I really agonized over the placing of that song, because lyrically it's of a piece with quite a lot of the other material on the record, and therefore it felt like it belonged. But on the flip side, you know, it's a little bit of a thing with me and with many other people to always have that one solo acoustic song on a record. And I was kind of rejecting that a little bit this time around. It's like, I don't fucking have to do that if I don't want to, you know, like, and I wanted this to be a punk rock record, and therefore having a kind of country song in it felt a bit weird. And like, it is, and I use the word country advisedly, and there is a huge part of me that is interested at some point in the medium term of trying to write a proper Kris Kristofferson, George Jones style country record, you know, and there's that kind of simplicity of form and complete the sparseness and the perfection of the lyrics, and like every word syllable falls where it's meant to fall, and that kind of that style of writing, which I personally consider to be quite a lot harder than most others to do well, you know. And Townes Van Zandt is a huge part of that for me as well. And there's just an economy to the writing there, which is really hard to get right. So there was a part of me that was thinking maybe I should save that song and put that with another collection of similar songs that would be a thing later. But the lyrics kind of go with this. And in the end, it ended up on the bonus tracks.
It still ends up kind of a really great finale for the whole thing.
Well, thank you.
And by the way, as far as, you know, you already got Isbell on the record. So, you know, doing something a little bit further on in the country thing.
Oh, yeah.
Him again, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, absolutely. And there's a funny thing that, like, I mean, I think I spend a lot of the majority of my waking hours thinking about songwriting in some shape or form, right? That's my major obsession in life. I try and keep a lid on it as far as other people are concerned. I don't want to subject everybody to this endlessly. But, like, it's a big thing for me. And I was chatting with my friend Ginger the other day, who is the songwriter for a band called The Wild Hearts, who are a sort of classic punk rock band over here in the UK. And we were both agreeing that, like, there's almost this, like, an iron cast law of songwriting. The longer you do it, the closer you come to country. Because there's something, it's like the platonic ideal, if you know what I mean, of songwriting to me, is that pure kind of Jerry Jeff Walker kind of thing of just, like, 2 minutes. Even, like, I'm a huge Merle Haggard fan as well. And, like, you know, something like Sing Me Back Home or Mama Tried or whatever, it's got, like, a verse and a half and a chorus and a solo and then another chorus and then you're out, and it's just flawless.
It says everything in that song.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. My God, like, Sing Me Back Home destroys me every single time I hear it. And so there's that. And I think that over time, most songwriters end up kind of in the world of country, you know. Loretta Lynn as well, obviously, and Dolly Parton, in fact, who's one of the greatest songwriters alive. So yeah, you know, there's definitely that. That's a natural part of the process. I'm sort of toying with whether or not I'm old enough to actually make a country record yet. Maybe
I will say this: your lyrics are absolutely good enough that I wouldn't put it past
you. That's kind. That's kind.
I really wouldn't put it past you. Yeah, and that just goes on further to my compliments of this new record with FTHC. Frank, congratulations on this.
Thank you.
Congratulations on having a number one record and connecting with so many people, because this is good.
Yeah, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
And otherwise, I hope you survive okay on 50 states in 50 days. And
yeah,
we'll see you in Louisville.
Yeah, I will. Let's have a possibly non-alcoholic beer around the show. That would be lovely.
Can do, man. All right. Take care out there. We'll see you soon.
See you later, man.
Big old thanks to Frank Turner. The new album is called FTHC. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit the subscribe button before you get out of here. Again, 3 new episodes every week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with all of your favorite artists, and some new ones that you can be turned on to as well at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media sites, mostly on Twitter, but also Facebook and Instagram, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith from Kyle Meredith With. After you check out the latest episode of my show, be sure to check out some of our other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including Standing BTS, a bi-weekly podcast covering all things BTS and ARMY, and The Opus, Consequence's original documentary podcast exploring legendary albums and their lasting legacies. So head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
Wilson, you sent the game-winning email at the buzzer, avoiding a 4:55 meeting on everyone's calendar. How did you do it?
I got a huge assist from Grammarly, an AI writing partner that helped me make my point.
96% of Grammarly users say that it helps them craft more impactful writing. Would you agree?
Grammarly helped adjust my tone to navigate tough work conversations. And it works everywhere I write, so I can quickly communicate effectively.
Your teammate used Grammarly to summarize an important document, making a three-pointer. How did he do it?
It only took one click. When everyone uses Grammarly, everything just makes sense.
You made an incredible slam dunk to end the game. The meeting was canceled, and your team will go home champions. Go to grammarly.com/podcast to download it for free. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.